What do you need to know about God? When your coworker comes to you and says, "Yesterday my doctor said I have cancer." What can you say about God to your neighbor? When your neighbor comes to you and says, "They were giving out pink slips yesterday and I got one." What do you need to know about God's goodness at that moment? How do you respond when a friend says, "I don't know what happened, but my spouse left me, and I didn't see it coming"? What do we need to know about God's goodness? And what if any of those things happen to us? What do we need to know about God's goodness at that moment? King David faced many enemies and many hardships. Not only as a king, but as a shepherd, as a young man. And he understood and he knew the goodness of God. King David did not grow up in a palace with a silver spoon in his mouth. He grew up on the fields. He faced many wild animals, many wild beasts. He faced times of loneliness and times of despair and times where Saul was after him for his life. Times when his own son was after him. What did he know about God's goodness that helped him to face the beasts, to face the wild animals and those who wanted to kill him? What did he know about the goodness of God? Well, in verse 4, we're going to finish verse 4 today. We began last week. But again, it says this, and you know it, "But yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." Why? "For thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." Last week, in case you weren't here last week, or in case you've forgotten, because I know sometimes it's easy to forget. You go in the kitchen, and like I do, and why am I in here? What am I in here for? So you may have forgotten what we talked about last week, and that's okay. Let me refresh you real quick. The valley of the shadow of death is a real place. It's a canyon. It's on the way between Jericho and Jerusalem. Think of the Grand Canyon, but this canyon is much more narrow. And it's about 800 feet deep. And so, unless the sun is directly overhead, the light is not good in the canyon. And so they call it the Valley of the Shadow of Death, because many times wild animals would hide in the shadows. Many times robbers would hide in the shadows. Remember when Jesus told the story of the Good Samaritan? This is probably where he meant this would have happened, because it was between Jericho and Jerusalem. And in these shadows would bring fear. And David says, "Yea, though I walk," because he probably took his sheep through that valley many times, that canyon. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not be afraid. I will not fear." Why? "For God is with me. His rod and his staff, they comfort me." I think one of the first things I would tell my friend or my neighbor or my coworker is that you are not alone. God's goodness goes with you in every valley of life. In every valley where you are afraid, God is there. That you're not walking it alone. We learned that last week. That was the whole point of the message last week. That God is with you. That God's goodness is never leaves you in times of hard times or difficult times. Don't ever think God's not good to me anymore. Yes, he's good to you. And yes, he's with you. He hasn't left you or forsaken you. He is there. Today I want to examine the rest of this verse because there's so much good here. And I want to particularly look at the staff and the rod in a moment. But I want you to understand that when the Lord calls his sheep, he's not doing us any favors. Because sheep aren't really the smartest animals on the planet. As a matter of fact, they have hardly nothing to defend themselves with. By the way, they don't run very fast. They kind of like waddle around. So they're not going to run away from a lion. They're not going to run away from a wild animal. And guess what? They're only going to gum you to death because their teeth aren't very sharp. So they're not going to bite you hard if you're a wild animal. And they don't have any claws to claw you with. They don't even see very well. So they don't even see the enemy until it's right up on them. And they have a tendency to wander over mountains and over cliffs. They'll fall into ditches. Their greatest strength, their greatest weapon is that they can be on the side of a mountain and lean over without falling. That's about the only thing they can do to save themselves, which isn't much, right? So basically, they're defenseless animals. There are two weapons that the shepherd always has with him. One is a staff. A staff is about 2 feet in length. And he'd carry the staff with him, usually right under his belt, so he could pull it out if an enemy came. If a lion or a bear or something came to attack the sheep, this is what the shepherd had to face the lion with. Now, you know David had a slingshot, and if it's a ways away, that's one thing. But if you're in the canyon and the lion leaps up on you, you can't just take the slingshot out and kill the lion. At that point, you've got to use the rod here. And the rod is your only weapon. You've got to be pretty brave to be a shepherd, don't you? I would think. But this would be their defense. This represented their power and their authority for the shepherd. So for God, the rod represents his power and authority in our lives and over us. That God has all power. That he's able to deliver us like a shepherd is able to deliver the sheep from the lion. God is able to deliver us because he has a strong rod. He has strong power. His power knows no limits, right? That's why all things are possible with him. And here's the thing. God never misuses his power. He never misuses the rod. He never, ever touches his sheep with the rod. He won't abuse the sheep. But those who attack the sheep, be careful. Because you stand against his power and against his authority. Because God protects us. His power is like all his other attributes. It's attached to his holiness. There's a moral base to God's power. God doesn't just demonstrate his power to show off. God demonstrates his power based upon a reason and a purpose. And it always ends up glorifying him and bringing him glory and honor. It always accomplishes his will. The psalmist says in Psalm 62:11, power belongs to the Lord. In Psalms 147:5, it says, great is our God, and abundance in power, or abundance in strength. In other words, it overflows him. He's got so much power, he doesn't know what to do with it all, because he's got so much power. There's a story that I often tell of a little boy who is walking down. He's a fifth grade boy. And he's coming down the hallway, and the pastor comes walking down beside him. And the pastor says, I've got a candy bar in my pocket. He says, I'll give you this candy bar if you can tell me something God can do. And that little fifth grade boy, much like Daniel, he's pretty smart, looked back at the pastor and said, Pastor, I'll give you a whole bag of candy if you can tell me something God can't do. Because you know what? It's a lot harder to think of something God can't do than what God can do. Because all things are possible with God. His power is that great. The psalmist says in Psalms 89:11, the heavens are yours, and yours also the earth. You have found the world and all that is within it. His power knows no limits. His power is complete power, full of power. Sometimes in our world today, we try to limit God, don't we? You know, in our modern world, we've turned away from God. And now science is our God. We dismiss God from discussions. And only what science can do, do we say can happen. And only what we believe is possible. Because man doesn't want to give credit to God. No, man wants to put him in the corner. Now, I'm not knocking science. Because science is a good thing. And science looks for patterns. And when they find a pattern, when science finds a pattern, they make it a nature of law. Kind of like gravity, right? If I let go of this mic, it's going to fall and hit the ground because that's the law of gravity. But understand that every law is a law that is demonstrated by the power of God, because God is holding this whole world together. And every consistency we find, every law, quote, of nature that science says, is really God's power in and over our world. So when that mic would hit the ground, that's God's power over this planet so that we don't fly off as it's spinning so fast around. It's the power of God. And all we're doing is we're seeing the power of God. So tonight, or when you go home and it's getting, the sun's getting reset, and it's probably all the orange in the sky and it's so beautiful, don't go, "Oh, wow, nature is so beautiful." Say, "Oh, no, God, your power is on full display. You're awesome." When you look at that little tulip and you see the beauty in that tulip, don't go, "Oh, nature is beautiful." Go, "Oh, God, your power to create such a beautiful flower. Oh, that is you. I give you praise." Instead of just pushing God in the corner, that's God's power being demonstrated. What's truly amazing to me is that God's power is demonstrated out of nothing. Like, he doesn't need anything to create this world. I mean, if you and I, if I go to create something, I've got to go to Lowe's and get the material and bring it home and put it together. Not God. Literally out of nothing, he can just speak and there it is. I don't even understand how he can even do that. Like, how did he even create this world? How can you just speak and there is light? How do you just speak and then there's an earth and then it's formed? And how can he do that? Right? I mean, you got to have something. It just blows your mind. If you want to understand God, you will never be able to fully understand him. And that's a good thing. Because I don't want a God I can understand. Because then he's no greater than I am. I want a God far greater than I am. And he can just speak and things are created out of nothing. And guess what? His power is effortless. It doesn't cost him any energy. Right? I like what it says in Isaiah 40:28. You probably know this really well. "Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth." And look at this line. "He will not grow tired or weary. His understanding, no one can fathom." In other words, you can't understand him. But here's the deal. He never grows tired and he never grows weary because his power is self-sustaining. He's not like us. We get tired. If we have to unload and move all these chairs out of here and put them in the back and then move them all back, oh, by the end, we're tired. Oh, our arms are sore. We're ready to go home and sit on the couch. But not so with God. God never grows tired. He never grows tired because his power is self-generating. He never needs anything at all to sustain him. Nothing. Like, he never says, boy, I'm thirsty and I need a drink. He never goes, man, I've worked up a sweat today. I can't wait to get back into my throne room and take a shower and lay down for a few moments. Never does God do that. Never does he go, man, I sure could use an energy drink right now or a protein bar to kind of get through this day. Because, boy, Lee's been driving me crazy all day. He never does that. So let me tell you, you can call his name as many times as you want because he never grows tired. You're not going to wear God out. You can go to the altar over and over again, and you're not going to wear God out. He is self-sustaining. The best example I can give you is what Gabriel told Mary in the Christmas story in Luke chapter 1 and verse 35 and verse 34, beginning with verse 34. And then Mary said to the angel, how can this be, since I do not know a man? In verse 35, the angel said to her, the Holy Spirit will come upon you, and the power of the highest will overshadow you. Therefore, also the Holy One who is to be born will be called the Son of God. Verse 36, now indeed, Elizabeth, your relative, has also conceived a son in her old age. And now this is the sixth month for her who was called barren. And look at verse 37, for with God nothing will be impossible. All things are possible with God. The angel Gabriel knew that God has all the power and all the authority. That God can do the impossible. So when God takes his staff and you're in the valley, you don't have to fear because you've got the power of God with you. Can I just share with you a little personal testimony for a moment? I don't usually do a lot of these, but I think I want to today. Several years ago, our car had broken down and it just had bit the dust. I've always driven older cars except for once. We bought one new car. But we were driving an old car. It broke down. I said, God, we really need a car. And you know what happened? The pastor who was pastoring the church I was at the time, he had passed away. I did his funeral. And then after the funeral, the family were talking and they said, we understand that you need a car. Would you like to buy the pastor's car? I said, wow. Yeah, what a great offer. And so they gave it to me at a great price. I bought the car, a little Taurus, and drove it for a long time. And then, my own stupidity, I totaled it, and I had to get another car. And I was like, God, where am I going to get another car from? You know, I was praying, asking God. And I had preached at a vineyard church in Greenville, and one of the deacons found out that I needed a car, and his mother had just passed away. And he says, I've got this white Cadillac. It's only got 54,000 miles on it. How would you like to have this white Cadillac? Out of nowhere, God presents me with a car to buy. Now, it's a big, old, ugly car now. My brother teases me, says, it's your gangster car. But I've been driving it, and now that car's been giving me some trouble here and there, and so I've been saying, God, I need a car, I need a car, I need you to provide. And all of a sudden, a friend of ours that we know really well, good friends, his wife passed away. God calls me, or he calls me and says, we're talking, and he says, how would you like to buy my wife's car? He says, I'll give it to you at a really good price. So this week, I bought that car. And out of nowhere, God has provided. The point is, God has all the power. He has all the resources needed to take care of us. You know, you think, oh, I'm not going to find one. Where is the one going to come from? God knows. He will provide. He will take care. Because God has all power and all authority. And that brings me great comfort. God can demonstrate his power over everything. He can demonstrate his power over nature. He can demonstrate his power over illness. He can demonstrate his power over circumstances, over demons, and over this entire earth. Nothing is greater in power than God is. And don't you ever, ever think that Satan and God are equal in power. Don't ever believe the lie of Star Wars that there are two opposing forces in this planet and they're at war. Yeah, they are at war, but one's far greater than the other. One is being told what it's allowed to do and what it cannot do. And only one has complete authority over heaven and earth. It is Jesus Christ. He has all authority, all power. His rod represents his power and his authority. But the staff. The staff represents his compassion and his love. What a combination for a shepherd to have. A shepherd has a staff and a rod. You see, the shepherd uses this staff to guide the sheep. Again, the shepherd never beats the sheep with this. Just like he doesn't with the rod or the staff. The staff, he doesn't either. But he will from time to time. If a sheep gets out of line and starts to go along the other way, he'll take it this way and tap it. Just kind of let it know you need to come back over on this side. Or he'll take it and tap it this way. He demonstrates his love to the sheep constantly with this staff. When a sheep falls into a briar's patch or into a ditch, he will take it out and hook it and bring it back out. That's why it can't be afraid of this, right? He'll take it and put it around it, and he'll lift it up and say, "Come here, Whitey, come here, I got you," and bring it right back. He'll take good care of the sheep with the staff. Here's what we know. God has a rod that demonstrates his power, but God has a staff that demonstrates his compassion and love, his guidance, his deliverance, his power working in our lives. What good would it be if he is all powerful, but yet he never demonstrated it through love? He would just be a mean dictator. But because of this, he demonstrates his love to us. You see, that's God's goodness here. You have an all-powerful God who's willing to guide and deliver you, and that is a good, good God. As we sing in the song, his goodness is running after me, right? The scriptures, they teach us so much about his love over us, his goodness to us, as we're doing this series together. In 2 Corinthians 9:8, it says this, "And God will generously provide for all you need. Then you will always have everything you need and plenty left over to share with others." What does that verse tell us? That verse tells us that God will meet my needs. God will take care of me, right? Look at the next verse. Matthew chapter 9, verse 27 says this. "After Jesus left the girl's home, two blind men followed along behind him, shouting, 'Son of David, have mercy on us.' They went right into the house where he was staying, and Jesus asked him, 'Do you believe I can make you see?' 'Yes, Lord,' they told him, 'we do.' Then he touched their eyes and said, 'Because of your faith, it will happen.'" Jesus has the power and the ability to heal. That's his goodness. That's his love to us. That's his staff, the ability to heal. Look at Daniel 3:17, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You remember the story? It says, "If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king." God has the ability to deliver us. In Jude chapter 24, "Now to him who is able to keep you from stumbling and to present you faultless before the presence of his glory with exceeding joy. He has the ability to keep you. It's demonstrating his love. Psalms 32:8, and I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go, and I will guide you with my eye. He has the ability to guide us. So what should we do when we find ourselves in the valley? What should we tell our friend or our neighbor? We should tell them, hey, God is with you. That God loves you. That God hasn't forgotten you. That God knows you. I was touched in Lisa's prayer when she was praying and talked about God knowing where we're at in life. I've been reading in the churches in Revelations 2 and 3, and I come away with one thought. God knows me, and God knows everyone in the church. He knows us. God knows you. He loves you. He is with you. And then I would tell them, bring your hurt to a compassionate God. Bring your situation to God. Because God is full of compassion and he's full of power. You know, sympathy says, I see your pain. Sympathy says, I'm sorry. But compassion is moved to action. Compassion goes another step forward. I may have shared this once before, but it's like watching a show and you're watching TV and all of a sudden it comes out and you see starving kids in Africa and you see their stomachs bulging out and you see the flies going all around their head and they say, will you do something? Sympathy says, oh man, I really feel for those kids. I really hurt for them. I really can feel their pain. And then we go on watching the show. Compassion goes, let me go get the checkbook and write a check. Let me go do something to help. Because I can't just sit there and watch. Compassion of Christ. He just can't sit back and watch. Even it means him coming and dying on a cross so that our relationship with God the Father can be restored. He couldn't just sit back and go, oh man, I really feel their pain. I really wish that something could be done. No, he had to do something. He does the same for us with his compassion. He won't just sit back from heaven in a distance. He will come and he will minister. He will either minister with his power and bring deliverance, or he'll minister with his staff and bring his love into your life. But you won't walk through that valley alone. He will be with you. Secondly, I would say, or thirdly, I would say this. Follow Jesus. In your situation, follow him. For he knows the right direction you need to go. A shepherd always knows the way. So follow the shepherd. Follow Jesus through the valley that you're in. Listen to his voice. Follow his direction. For God's got a plan to take what was meant for your harm and turn it to your good. In other words, to make a testimony out of what the devil has brought into your life. So follow his direction. Listen to his voice. The shepherd is never behind the sheep, pushing the sheep forward. The shepherd is always out in front, and the sheep are following. We don't have to push Jesus and say, Jesus, get going. This is where I need to go. No, just follow him. He knows the way to go. He knows how to get you through that valley. He won't leave you. And the third thing I would say is this. Is if you will follow Jesus, I promise you, he will lead you in the right direction. Psalms 23:4 says this, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? For thy rod is there. That's your power, your authority. And your staff, that's your compassion. And what do? They both comfort me. Can I tell you this morning that what I have found to be true is that I experience God's compassion and his love and his power and authority more in the valley than on the mountaintop. I sense God's goodness in my life more in the valley than I do on the mountaintops of life. Why is that? I think it's because I just realized I need him more in those times. I don't think God changes, but I think I'm just more attentive for his voice. I think I'm more attentive to say, God, I'm overwhelmed by this, and I need you to guide me and direct me. God's goodness. Where would we be without the goodness of God? Man, I am so thankful that God doesn't leave me in the valleys. Even when it's my fault for going in the valley, God doesn't leave me. I can call out and his grace is there. He brings forgiveness and he ministers to me in the valley. I'm thankful that when life is unfair, God doesn't go, well, that's just the way life is. God comes to me in the valley and he ministers to me. He is there for